Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 23rd day of November, Anno Domini 2019, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Google has announced that CloudPrint, its cloud-based printing solution, is being retired at the end of next year. It's an early heads-up, yes, but it's a necessary one. CloudPrint is pretty widely used. Google recommends that users of CloudPrint identify an alternative solution. The announcement comes in the form of a support document from CloudPrint that popped up recently, which is kind enough to remind us that CloudPrint has technically been in beta since it launched a decade ago. And I quote, CloudPrint, Google's cloud-based printing solution that has been in beta since 2010, will no longer be supported as of December 31, 2020. Beginning January 1, 2021, devices across all operating systems will no longer be able to print using Google Cloud Print. We recommend that over the next year you identify an alternative solution and execute a migration strategy. Harumph. Google notes that Chrome OS native printing solutions have been vastly improved since CloudPrint launched in 2010 and also promises that native printing in Chrome OS will continue to get more features over time. Google has improved the native printing experience for Chrome OS and will continue adding features to native printing. For environments besides Chrome OS or in multi-OS scenarios, we encourage you to use the respective platform's native printing infrastructure and or partner with a printing solutions provider. All modern versions of Chrome OS can find network printers just fine and make installation a click-and-point breeze. Using a cable-connected printer is almost as easy, so Google clearly doesn't feel that continuing to put time and resources into cloud printing is necessary. Of course, if you bought a printer that only does cloud printing, well, A, it's getting pretty old, and B, you will have a year to get a new one. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google shutting down Cloud Print? Your choices are, oh no, who cares? Don't know if I'm using it, Google what now? And of course, other. So far, we've got 101 votes. Oh no is the top one, followed very closely by who cares. Followed by don't know if I'm using it, followed by Google what now, and of course nine of you said other. And if you said other, then we would love to have you put a comment as to what you actually were thinking in our forums. If you scroll down and if you go to our website at soundbites.org, again, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, you will see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And the current item, number one item, at least at the moment, is 23 November 19, Google shutting down Cloud Print. And once you have put your comment in there, if you said other, then or even if you didn't, then you can join us here by giving us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Who prints anymore?
Much. Well, that's it. That's certainly a large part of it. I don't. Well, that's not true. Once a week, I print out 4 sheets of paper with the news on them. That's it.
We've been trying to go paperless at our office, taking more electronic signatures, but I still like having a physical signature on a piece of paper when a customer agrees for the charges.
Mm-hmm.
That way they, yeah, they come back. That's not my signature. I didn't sign it. You never told me that. Well, all right. Here's the piece of paper that says
you did.
You did. Well, I didn't read it.
Well, that's not.
Then why did you sign it? It's not my. You signed it saying you read it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you check the box next to it that says you read it.
Right. But yet they'll still try to deny it.
Yep.
Yep. Well, we see that all the time. I didn't install that. Yes, you did.
Mm-hmm. Because they get click happy. Yeah,
get click
Somebody
happy.
Sitting at your computer with your password installed it.
Right.
Who else is at your computer? Nobody.
Not.
Then it was you.
Then it was, then
but
it was
you. Things sneak in. You don't know they installed.
Right. But yeah, so Google Print, Cloud Print was, of course, a complete necessity back in the early days of Chrome OS, because it had no real other way to connect to anything, frankly. It was a very crude operating system. And as time went on, it has become more and more, in many ways, Linux-like. And so they now actually use CUPS, the something printing system.
Common Unix
printing system, thank you, to do their printing. So all the print drivers are coming from the CUPS system. Everything's coming from the CUPS system.
Well, the big problem was always the driver. If even like HP, they make 100 printers, there's 1,000 drivers. You're not going to be able to load all of those into a 16-gigabyte Chromebook.
By doing something generic.
Right. But by having a generic printing system, and same thing is true on the iPad. Now, the printers are built in. AirPrint is Apple's version of Google Cloud Print. The printer knows that one language, and then all the devices use it.
Right.
Instead of needing to have 100
And that's a lot easier if they can all write to a common, language.
Right.
Than trying to, like we've said, there's many variations now.
Right.
And printers.
Yep. The way CUPS does it is CUPS has tens of thousands of drivers.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is you connect to CUPS, and CUPS says, you've got this driver. You've got this printer. I will download this driver. And so you only have the one you need. Now, if you've got multiple printers, you have multiple drivers. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
But even so, that's not a big deal. And so that's the way CUPS works. You're right, it's Common Unix Printing System. And it's been around for decades, many, many decades. It's a Unix printing system. So, yeah. And it works great, and it continues to work great. And by using it, Google gets rid of one layer of complexity in their operating system. And that's, I think, the big reason they're doing it. They don't care in terms of disk space or anything else. That's not important
to
them.
That's so cheap and irrelevant.
Right, but making the operating system itself less complex is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, and I'm sure that they're looking at the numbers and discovering that very few people are still using it, comparatively at least, because now, for example, you get a school that buys 300 Chromebooks, there's a guy who sets it all up. There's a system administrator who sets everything up, and he says, they're going to use this printer in the classroom. And you're done. And you don't need to do anything else. So, yeah, I get why they're doing it, and printing certainly has come a long way. When I got my new Chromebook, all I did was say, I want to add a printer. It went out, found the printer on the network, said, you want to use this one? I said, yes. I was done. Two clicks, essentially.
It was the printer you were sitting next to?
Yes, the printer. It was indeed the printer I was sitting next to. But yeah, so it's actually across the room because it's on a different plug.
Oh, so far away.
So far away. I have to actually get up and get the print out.
You probably had to take a nap after it.
Ooh, unbelievable. We used to have that problem I suppose I shouldn't say this. The heck with it. I'm retired.
At
RIT, faculty all wanted the printers in their offices because, God forbid, they should have to walk down the hall to get a printout. The only people who had printers in their offices were managers because they often had to print out HR stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right? And so, you can't have that sitting
You can't
on the
have
hall
that or... sitting anywhere. So managers had printers in their office, but if for example, you were the manager of my department, you had a printer in your office and I didn't. So somehow I was insulted by that.
And every office you go into where there is, you know, like a public printer, there's always piles of paper that people have printed and never picked up.
And they don't bother to pick
up. I've been to a couple of businesses where they actually had to put like those little mailboxes above the printer for everyone's pages that they never pick up.
Well, what we did was we put in printers that don't print.
Yeah.
You have to go to the printer, type in your password in order for your print to be released and print.
Yep.
Oh, it used to drive me nuts. People would sit there and click
on it.
That's
a short putt, really, not a drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But would sit there and click on it and click on it because they didn't hear the printer, you know, maybe across the room, you know, going off instantly because they hit the print button. So they keep hitting it because somebody else's had already printed to it before that and was thinking because of the graphics. But because theirs didn't print right away, they go ahead and click, click, click. And then you go over to their PC, pull up their printer, and they got about 20 of them queued up.
Yeah.
It's like, seriously? And then, like Steve said, you know, they don't think about it. They lose track of it, and then it goes ahead and prints it once it's the queue is cleared up. And they got this whole stack of this document, and they, oh, there it is. They take the one and leave all the rest.
Yep. And we would see that time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
We had one group who set up a printer, and it was a high-end color printer, and they were using Apple Print. And they were upset because the naming scheme had it like the fourth or fifth printer. When they brought up a list of printers,
they're alphabetical.
And they were alphabetical. It was like the fourth or fifth one they wanted it first. I said, you really don't want that. They said, no, we want it first. So they renamed it AAAAAAA. I said, that's a very bad idea. Because they didn't want to put any security on it because it would meant, I don't know what. They didn't want it.
Some people would have to think about putting in passwords.
So the next morning, I get this frantic phone call. Apparently, overnight, some student on a Mac clicked on that printer and printed an entire ream of pornographic pictures.
Because that's the printer you were sitting next to, he thought.
In full color.
Sweet, that's a great printer. I'll just print my collection.
Well, yeah, right, because you see what kind of printer it is. Yep. It's this very high-end dye sublimation printer, color, beautiful.
At $10 a sheet, or probably.
At $10 a page.
Yeah, but what?
An entire ream
of
paper.
What an easy way to get it at.
And of course, they couldn't get at it because it was in a whole other building that's locked up at night. So the poor secretary,
I'm surprised it wasn't printed two or three times because the printer next to him wasn't printing anything. So he submitted the job again.
I mean, he used an entire ream of paper. So the poor secretary comes in the next morning. She's the first one in. She goes to the printer. Oh, there's a whole stack of stuff here. She picks it up. She was not a young woman, and it was a bit of a shock to her.
Ew. The printer's been tainted. We need another one.
So, of course, I get a call because there's something wrong. I said, look, you didn't want any security on it, and you wanted it to be named AAAAA. This is what you get. I warned you.
Yep. So then they named it, ZZZ Crap?
Yeah, something along that line. I had named my printer Waste Basket.
Mm-hmm. So you can say, go look in the waste basket?
Yeah. So who's going to print to the waste basket?
Yep.
So
we had a similar issue when I was at Kodak. Kodak's global network was available in your file share list and your printer share list. So say you had to go to Taiwan to give them presentation. You could print your presentation on their printer.
Nice.
But it also meant that every printer in the world was in your list, and it just went on forever and ever and ever.
Yeah. That's an interesting issue, you know, if you're...
Before we knew about zones and...
right, exactly.
And breaking things into network ranges.
Right. Back in the day, Apple, among many other companies, didn't do that.
Yeah.
You just saw a list of everybody's printers. So it
was, they
it
didn't was, think there might be 50,000 people using your network and have 1,000 file servers and 500 printers.
Right. Because they were designed for individuals and for very small businesses of like three people. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is our friend Carl in Pottstown, PA. How are you, Carl?
Good. How are you?
Peachy.
My question has to do with cord cutting for cable TV watchers.
Sure.
Well, I just did it. I had Comcast, and I pulled it, and I don't have it anymore.
Congratulations.
So I'm looking at all these.
And the crowd goes wild.
Oh, okay. I was wondering what that was. Anyway, looking at all these alternative services like Sling TV and YouTube TV and so on and so forth.
Yep.
Available for cord cutters. And I have to pick one of these services. And I don't want to watch TV on my computer or on my Android telephone. I want to watch it on my home TV.
Sure.
So I'm going to pick one of these services. And my question is, I've never done this before. I'm confused because, for example, if I pick one, one of the cheapest ones is called Philo, P-H-I-L-O TV. And it says, available on Roku, available on Android TV, available on Apple TV, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't really understand what that means. Does that mean that if I want to subscribe to, let's say, Philo TV, that first I have to subscribe to one of those, like Roku, and then after I get that, then I'll have the option of subscribing to the Philo TV? Does that
mean
not exactly. Yeah.
Right. It's really kind of the other way around.
Yeah.
Those aren't subscriptions. Those are physical boxes. It's called a set-top box. So instead of your cable box, you'll have a Roku box or an Apple box or a Google box. Connected to your television to feed internet into it.
And a lot of them now, a lot of the newer TVs already had that built in.
They'll have one or more of those built in.
Yeah.
So if, let's say, for example, you've got a Roku box, you can now add the YouTube TV app to that box and watch YouTube TV on that device.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I guess my main question was, I know I have to pay a monthly service fee for the service, like YouTube TV.
Right.
But do I also have to pay another monthly service fee for the box?
No. You buy that one time.
Okay, that's good. That was my main thing, because I was wondering, do I have to pay two monthly service fees to get one thing?
And many of those boxes support multiple services. So on your Roku box, you could get Amazon TV, you could get Sling TV, you could get this TV service. On your Apple TV box, you can get this service and that service and the other service. And some of the boxes have exclusive apps. So the Apple TV box is the only one that can get the Apple TV service. Almost every box has Netflix and Hulu. Those are sort of the two big boxes.
And Disney Plus.
Disney Plus now, yeah. The bigger issue is now starting to come out that there are so many streaming services. So
well, before you get to all of that, if you're going to take a look at your TV, it may already have things like Roku built in. If it's a smart TV.
Yeah, I did. It's a Vizio TV. Unfortunately, it's a 2013 model, and they're not keeping up the software. I have to buy a new one if I wanted that.
All right, so before these guys get to you, let me tell you that starting Monday, Roku is having their Black Friday deals. The Streaming Stick Plus, which is the good one, is $30, down from $50. So take a look at those and their Ultras is $50 down from $100.
And many of the stores are doing Black Friday sales starting early too.
Right. Right.
But before you even start that, what I would recommend is your TV programs that you like to watch. You've got to sit and make a list. And I preached this a while back. You got to sit there and make a list of the programs that you like to watch and then go to these different services and see if they offer those in that bundle.
You have to know the program and the network they're on. You can't just say the channel number because the numbers don't matter anymore.
Right. You need CBS, NBC, ABC.
Right. And then what happens is you've got their traditional television channels of what we used to think of as TV or cable TV, and then you have internet-only services like Apple TV Plus and Disney Plus and Amazon Prime Video. CBS All Access, I hate them.
I hate them.
Because they have the new Star Trek series, and the only way you can get it is on CBS All Access subscription service. It's not showing on CBS television. It's only on the internet and only on subscription services.
Right.
So sometimes there's shows that you want to watch that are only on an internet service. So you have to add that on top of your television service. And suddenly you're back up to how much your cable TV might have been.
So, Carl, did we actually answer your original question?
Yes, you did, and a lot more. Thank you very much for explaining all that.
Okay, thanks.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
There are companies, and CNET had one recently, that compare the streaming services, and they all have to redo their grids now because Apple TV Plus came online and Disney Plus came online, so they have to add that into the mix. Disney has a combination service where you can get Disney Plus, Hulu, not Hulu TV, Hulu, and ESPN, for less than the cost of all three of them separately.
Right.
But I have heard from people, a lot of people love Disney Plus. You were posting you like The Mandalorian.
I like The Mandalorian a lot.
Disney Plus is not showing The Wonderful World of Disney.
Right.
And that upset my wife because that's what she wants to watch. Some of those old movies from the 50s and 60s, they're not showing.
Well, and a large part of that has to do with they've still got a contract with somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, as those contracts die, that's what happened with Netflix. All of their Marvel shows are falling out of contract.
That
just
used
in
to
time
be on Netflix.
Disney. Right.
Yeah.
Which, so now they'll all be on Disney Plus. But yeah, Carl has hung up. But Dave is right. You make a grid of all the programs that you watch and that you actually care about and see which of the TV type streaming services gives you that. Then you decide what else you're going to get. Do you want Netflix? Do you want Amazon Prime? I mean, my wife has Amazon Prime for her business. So that was a no-brainer. That's essentially, we've got that. We're done.
And then they throw in the video. I just started watching The Boys.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. It reminded me...
not entirely like the comic, but very nice.
Yeah. There was another TV show that just escaped my mind where the superhero... a little bit about The Tick. Because it's superheroes. It's how much of a jerk some of these superheroes are.
Yeah. The Tick is really well done.
They're in season two now on Amazon.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nina Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You That We Are Member Supported Jazz 90.1. Back in just a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hey, Nick. Niagara Falls.
Slowly I turned, step by step, inch by inch. Sorry, go. Wow. Go.
Not to make anything more confusing for the gentleman that, well, actually two things, but one thing is not to make anything too much more confusing for him, but there are a lot of boxes that are over-the-air tuners that are able to record live TV, say, with four tuners in it.
Yeah, that's...
one antenna. And they do have, like, a monthly service fee for, like, their guide.
Right.
But you get a whole guide. You can set up your recording. So if you do a lot of major network recording,
that's one way
to get around having to pay the cable company. And if you go with a box, say, like a TiVo box, they have a lot of the major apps built right into the box itself.
Yep. That's one thing to keep in mind with cord cutting is you don't necessarily get your local channels when you do an internet TV service. And so a lot of people will put up an antenna to get their local channels. Or you just keep the cheapest cable TV package there is to get your local channels. But the Silicon Dust now has a six tuner version for recording six channels at once. with our 30 or 40 over the air broadcast channels available.
And Tableau makes one too, four and six tuners.
Yep.
And it's an alternative. Plus, you can, with some of these, you can stream to another device on top of it, like a tablet or a laptop or another box in another room.
Yep.
So that's another thing. And the gentleman last week that had a problem with formats of documents to print.
Yes.
All the people. There is a free.
That was actually, I believe, a lady.
Oh, it was a lady. Okay,
yeah.
Yes. There was a problem with, you know, different formats. Well, there's a company called AVS for You that makes a bunch of different softwares, but they have a whole little section of free software. And one of them in there is a document converter that I love. And I've created so many things in rich type font, rich type documents, you know, on a Windows PC, and then converted them to Microsoft documents or PDFs for people who just know one way of viewing a document.
Yep.
And it's a great little document converter.
Looks like they have a lot of video and audio converters, too.
Yep. The audio converter you got to pay for, but the video converter is free. They have a media player for free, photo editor, image converter, document converter, even a disk copy software, which is full featured. All these are full featured.
Nice. Very
and you
nice.
Don't have to. There is. You don't have to pay for them.
And 20% off Black Friday deal already being posted.
Yep, for their full for everything. Yep.
Very
so,
cool.
But I just wanted to put that out there that there is a free document converter that works wonderful. So I know a lot of people want to create PDFs and it's not easy to do without paying for. You know.
Well, nowadays, certainly Microsoft Office, LibreOffice, and Google Docs all will convert to PDFs directly themselves.
Yeah.
You can do a save as and save as PDF. So that's gotten much easier for the big three, at least.
Yeah, because you used to have to pay for it before.
Right.
You know, if you had Adobe. You could not create, you could read them, but you could not create them for free.
Right.
So that's gotten easier to at least be able to convert something to another document.
Right.
So I just wanted to throw that out there in case people are having problems, you know, sending certain types of formats.
Right. And you know, you may not need to buy a converter for documents anymore, but you certainly could use a video or audio converter.
Sure.
Right. Oh, perfect. Yep. Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we appreciate it. There's really a lot of features that are available in all of the Office suites these days, whether you're paying for that with Office or you're getting it free with LibreOffice or Google Docs. And I'm sure that, not Keynote.
The Keynote reads PowerPoint. Pages reads
what's
Word.
What's their document?
What? Pages.
Pages.
Yep.
I'm sure Pages will convert to PDF for free as well.
Yeah, and any Apple program. It's built into the OS.
Right.
So even non-Apple programs can do it.
So yeah, it's all out there, and it's nice that that we've gotten to that point. PDF really has become an extremely universal format that people want to be able to read. And what's nice about it is you don't have to worry, do they have the right fonts?
Yep.
You don't have to worry if they're going to edit it later. I mean, it's just there and it's done.
And it's horrible because you can have executable code embedded in your PDF.
Well, that's a problem.
And the bad guys have started doing that. So be really, really careful about random PDFs someone sends to you.
Right. If you're not expecting it or you don't know the person who sent it,
pick up the phone. Well, if you get it, pick up the phone. They still make telephones.
Do they?
That you can actually call people on.
Do you know what? I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a feature of my Pixel.
You sure?
that I can actually make phone calls on it.
You should try it out sometime.
Let me write that down.
Something more to do.
There's this weird green icon on my phone that kind of looks like a banana. It's kind of curved.
I don't know what that is. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Chuck from Benfield, New York. What's up, Chuck?
Hi, guys. You were talking Rokus a little earlier.
Yes.
I have a box that I recently got an email that said, hey, we ain't supporting this no more, so go out and buy a new one. And you were talking about the stick. What I have goes to HDMI to my set with a Cat 5 cable coming in.
Yep.
The stick game is not going to cut it here, right?
Well, the stick itself, and I have a stick. The stick itself has an HDMI cable, has an HDMI port right on the end of it.
Okay, but does it need to plug into a USB port?
No, it plugs right into HDMI.
Some of them also have a USB port for power. And,
oh, okay.
And many TVs these days have a USB port on them.
Well, this is an older set, so I don't have that. That's what I was wondering.
Oh, yes, yes. You will need that. But mine came with a charger,
a power adapter. Yeah.
So I have, obviously, an outlet right there. So I plugged that little thing into the micro SD slot on the stick, and then the other end just plugged into the wall, and I was done.
Okay, and then you got a remote with it, or?
Oh, yeah, and you get a remote. The remote you can talk to it.
The remote's bigger than the box is.
Yes, it is, than the stick, yes.
That's our fat fingers you have to take into account.
Exactly.
Okay, so I don't need a PC and a USB port to plug this thing in and move from my box to the stick.
Nope.
All right, very good. Thank you.
Yep. All right, have fun.
Oh, Roku makes a soundbar now, too.
Roku makes a lot of stuff now.
That's the thing to keep in mind about a lot of these new TVs. The speakers built into the TV are crap.
Yeah, they really are.
Because they expect you to have a soundbar or external speakers or something. When I bought my last TV, that was the biggest thing on all the reviews, is that the speakers are crap. And so, well, I'll just plug in my nice external speakers on my stereo like I was intending to do anyway.
That's exactly right. There's a whole lot of Black Friday deals that are out there already. So you might want to check those out in terms of streaming players
and there's
audio
just,
accessories and everything else.
There's just as many Black Friday deal watching websites too.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
As there are Black Friday deals, I've liked Thrifter for a while. They have a lot of non-technical things too. So if you're looking for a new set of pots and pans. Cuisinart cast iron cookware set on sale for $55.
Nice.
Ooh.
Nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Bob. What's up?
Oh, good morning. Afternoon, whatever.
Whatever.
First off, as far as people wanting to cut the cord and stuff, my suggestion and what I do at home is a Plex server running on a computer that has a 4-tuner card in it and very large storage capacity.
Yep.
DVR, whatever I want, whatever. You're limited by what you put in it for hard drives. That's
right.
Great. You only get 20 channels around here these days, but at least where I am.
Right. And what product is that?
It's a Plex server.
Plex server.
Oh, yeah.
You can put it on Windows, but I do it on a Linux box.
Yep. Yeah, so Plex basically turns any computer into a DVR for you.
Right.
This is a nice, sweet setup. I can, over the air is equal or better to what I was getting on Time Warner because they don't, it's not compressed.
Right,
but
right.
But anyways, the other issue is the content creators have got us fairly short and curlies anyway.
Right.
Because what they're going to do is, like, Disney's now going to put all the Star Wars on their service. Hulu has the exclusive for the Orville.
Right.
Each show you want, you're going to have to subscribe to a different package for.
Well, and that's the problem. What we're seeing is right now, for example, Apple TV had really just a few big hits. There was the Jason Momoa thing, which people are not impressed by, apparently. There was something else, and then there was The Banker,
Banker just got pulled, yeah.
Just got pulled. So there are people who are saying, why am I on Apple Plus for a show I don't like, a show I can't get? People are saying, you know, for Disney, if you're not, look, if you've got kids, it's a complete no-brainer. If you don't have it, you're not as smart as you could be. But when it comes to, if you're not a Marvel fan, you know, you're not a Pixar fan, what is on there that you want?
Yeah, so each of the content producers are now making their own streaming service for their own content.
Right.
There used to be a law that a movie studio could not own a movie theater.
Right.
Just to stop things like this from happening.
Yeah, those laws all went away.
Yep.
Quite some time ago, because doesn't AMC own a movie theater chain?
Yes, it does. Yep. And it was during the Reagan era that stuff all went away.
They regulated everything, yeah.
Yep.
But the content creators, they were making a lot of money off the cable outlets, but people got tired of paying the cable company, so they're going cord cutting.
Right. So now
you're going to have, if you want to watch the Orville, for example, okay, fine, $45 a month for Hulu, or whatever they're up to now.
That's right.
If you want to watch something else like Disney, well, that's another $45 a month, or whatever.
One of the things that's confusing is that many of the services have different tiers. So, like, Disney itself is $6.99 a month for Disney Plus.
Yeah, but that's not the live TV, is it? That's not going to carry things like the Orville.
Disney doesn't offer live TV.
Right.
And then Hulu is also in that $7, $8 a month, although I think they have an $11 if you don't want commercials. But then there's Hulu TV is separate to give you TV channels. So, like, the Orville used to be on Fox Broadcast. I haven't heard that it's going to Hulu. I'm actually looking that up now because I loved Orville. Orville was the Star Trek series we really wanted.
Yeah. McFarlane and so forth decided to move it to Hulu.
Yeah. So is it on Hulu or is it on Hulu TV?
It's not on yet. That's the
confusion that's coming up.
I'm betting dollars to donuts it's going to be on the $55 a month service. It's not going to be on the cheap one. Because the expensive one is tagged as live TV, which is what the Orville would be.
Well, no, it isn't. Live TV is your ABC, CBS, NBC, you know, USA, things like that. That's live TV. Hulu itself is first-run Hulu-only content and old movies and old TV shows. That was one of the criticisms and worries about the Apple TV Plus service, which is being confused by the Apple TV physical box that does a lot of different services, that Apple doesn't have a back catalog of stuff.
Right.
So Disney is coming on with their Disney Plus service with new stuff like The Mandalorian, but they've got 100 years of old stuff they're putting on there too.
Right.
So that makes it a much more valuable proposition for a lot of people.
Right.
And Fox is the other owner of Hulu, so I can see... that could be why the Orville, which was run on Fox Broadcast, would go to Fox Streaming, which is Hulu. But then Fox also has their Fox Now streaming service.
Right. Eventually, half of those will go away.
Right.
We wanted
a la carte television. For years, we've been telling the cable companies we want a la carte television. Now that we have it, it's a lot more expensive than
we were.
Yeah,
but it's not really a la carte.
Well, we can buy whatever channel we want.
Right, that's true.
And we want all the channels because there's one show we want to watch on every stupid service.
Right.
So we're seeing people are binging. You sign up for Netflix and binge your show in a month. And then you cancel Netflix, sign up for Hulu, and binge your show for a couple of months. And then you cancel that and sign up for HBO Max and binge your shows for a couple of months.
That's why Disney Plus is doing The Mandalorian as a weekly series.
Yeah.
That's the way the market's going to go. People have to realize, hey, look, if we keep the noose around our necks, we're going to get caught and hung by it.
Right.
You know, a service like Netflix, an aggregator service which carries programming from all the sources, that's fine. You pay Netflix for whatever you've been charging, and you get. I don't mind paying for content, but I'm not going to pay six different providers $40 a month
because
I want to watch certain shows.
And that was the whole point of cable TV in the beginning, is it was an aggregate. It combined all of your different networks together, and then some of the new cable-only networks, what HBO, I think, was the first one. And then we started getting all these other networks to fill in the rest of the cable channels, and now they're all splitting off into their own streaming service. And then in 10 years, we'll be back to aggregating them again.
Yeah. What we're finding...
So, like the Star Trek franchise, anything new on Star Trek's coming out on CBS streaming.
Right.
Yep.
Can't watch that.
Unless you pay it. What I'm discovering is happening with a lot of the younger folks, my daughter's friends, certainly not my daughter, I hasten to say, but one of them will buy one service, another will buy another service, another will buy another service, and then they just add each other.
I think, was it Disney that said they don't care?
Yeah, Disney doesn't care.
Right.
Netflix doesn't care.
I don't know about that. But
right now.
They'll get everybody hooked
with password sharing and all that stuff.
Right. Yep. Well, that right now they don't care because they want to get you. They want to get you hooked up to four people. Disney will do up to four people. Netflix will do however many you're willing to pay for. Hulu seems to be unlimited. Last time I was at a friend of my daughter's who's living here in Rochester.
Well, what I've been reading, that's going to change because they're all getting really concerned with.
Yeah.
Well, they are, but right now, while they're getting people hooked, they're happy to let you do it.
You know what? And this is all funny because if you think back, say 60 years ago,
yeah,
all we had was three channels,
right,
three channels to fight over, and look at now.
I just read
you got more TV than going on than you could possibly watch in 12 lifetimes.
Right.
I read an article the other day about password sharing services like this, and there were people are saying they're getting tweets from their ex. You know, I broke up with you 6 months ago, and now you're asking for the Netflix password again?
Right. Well, but there's a difference between password sharing and adding a person as a user. So, yeah. For example, you can have four users on Disney Plus. So I've got me, my wife, my daughter.
And you each get your own list of shows
you
want to watch.
We each get our own list of shows and our own setup. The same thing on Netflix. We originally had three videos at once. Remember when Netflix sent you videos?
Yeah. One or I remember I had one and then I upped it to two a week.
Right, I upped it to three. Again, because my daughter, my wife, and I each wanted a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm grandfathered in because we were Netflix customers from day one. I'm grandfathered in. I have three sign-ins to Netflix. So my wife has one, my daughter has one, and I have one. Well, that's different from sharing my password with someone.
Yeah, but because of their concern with piracy, they just want to get paid. If you want to buy a DVD for the living room and you want one for your car too, they want you to buy two DVDs. That's their attitude.
Yeah. Well, right.
Of that, my prediction is before too long, each one of these accounts is going to have to, they're going to track it to the MAC address of the device, and that MAC address of the device is going to have to be on the same IP address as the other devices on that account.
Some of them are already doing geotagging so that, you're sharing among 10 devices in your own house, but as soon as someone tries to log in a different city or a different state, then it doesn't let them because that, you know, that's not sharing in a household. Usually when you look at those terms, it says four users in the same household.
Right. Right, and is a household, my daughter's in Arizona, but so she's not really in my household, but she's in my family.
Yeah.
And she's my daughter.
I don't think you're going to keep counting that as a legitimate use.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. Well, we'll see. We'll do it till they don't.
I think when I heard the news story, what I heard was they were upset with, you know, folks give it to their kids and they go off to college. And then all of a sudden,
they give it to everybody else.
And then all of a sudden, everybody in that whole dorm is all watching on, you know, the same account.
Right.
And they're losing money that way.
Right.
Because now instead of, you know, within your family is okay.
Right.
But the minute, you know, like I say, little Johnny goes to school and he hands it out to, you know, 15 classmates and then they pass it on to somebody else. Now all these people are getting Netflix for free.
And then their crappy movies show up in your list.
Well, that's the worst. Before Netflix divided everything, I had Lizzie
Borden.
No, not
took
Lizzie
an ex,
Borden.
Gave her husband.
Yeah. No, the Disney TV show, Lizzie McGuire. I had every season of Lizzie McGuire in my Netflix queue.
I didn't know you cared for that.
Yeah. Well, you know me.
Hey,
so,
yeah. That's the thing, yeah, because I've seen you in a dress, too.
And I look good. I have good legs.
You had good gams.
I do. But, yeah, I agree with you. There's we'll see how it shakes out. What we're seeing right now is certainly not what we're going to see in the future.
The carriers aren't. The carriers are just the middlemen. The evil folks are the content creators and their greed.
Right, right.
They're driving all this.
Right.
They want to keep their own products on their own services now.
Well, it's no different than any other, you know, say like the cable companies and, you know, what they offer for speeds and everything else for internet. You know, it's all about a greed. You can go to third world countries.
Don't get him started on his green lighting.
Yep.
Yeah, third world countries have faster internet service than we ever dreamt of.
Oh, I know, but I've got okay service with Time Warner as far as internet. But every time Nick gets going about green light, oh, good grief. A lot of people can't get that, so shush.
Oh, I can't wait.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. We are seeing consolidation within the content creator. So you're not going to see Disney stuff anywhere but Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to see, Fox stuff anywhere but Hulu, and it's going to go on like that. I worry about what is going to happen with people like Netflix. They don't own content creators.
No, they don't.
Well, they've started making a lot of their own first-run series now, so they probably saw the writing on the wall when they were licensing shows from other companies.
Well, and the same thing is true of HBO.
Yeah.
I mean, HBO is so expensive. Why would I...
Well, and the one thing I had read that is really stupid is that... So HBO is $15 a month for cable TV. Then their HBO Max streaming only is $15 a month. And there's different shows on each one. So if you want all their shows, you got to pay for each service.
Right.
And that's just ridiculous.
And both of those are more expensive than if you were watching it on cable.
Yeah.
And I have no idea where they think they're going with this stuff. But I know where we're going. We're going on a little break. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but don't go away. We've finished an hour of this nonsense. We've got a whole nother hour coming up. So go take a quick bio break, refill your coffee cup or whatever adult beverage you may be drinking, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we have been able to continue to be strictly member-supported Jazz 90.1. We thank each and every one of our members. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Don't go away.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line again. Hi, Mark. What's up this time?
I forgot one thing when I called. I know you guys have been talking about CBS with the Star Trek thing. If you have a kid that's in college, anybody, my daughter gets it cheap.
Yeah, a lot of the places have educational deals and
this deal and that deal. They're one of the ones that don't care as long as you're paying the right amount for the amount of people you have streaming.
Right. Well, that was my thing about. Sorry, go ahead.
No, no, it's fine. That's what they do require that you pay for the right amount of streams.
Yep. That's the same deal I have with Netflix. We pay for three streams, so we get three streams. And I don't think that they care if one of them's in Arizona.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Right now, they just don't. They did this because they don't want you sharing passwords, so they want you paying for accounts.
Right.
So
right.
If you are going to do that, a lot of people don't mind throwing in a few bucks to help pay for something.
Right.
And now they're getting more users, and they're getting the right amount of streams. So a lot of them have converted to that. But CBS, my daughter gets it cheap. I mean,
it's 25% off
two streams for like under $4, $3, I think it is.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Like $3, and it's limited commercials. It's not all commercials.
Right, right, right. I would much prefer zero commercials, of course.
Right, they don't offer that to the college kids, but. You know, it's better than watching it, say, if they had it on demand, they did, you know, it would be the whole thing. But it's much better that way. But, yeah, if anybody has college kids and they want that CBS app, they're one of the ones that do offer college kids a discount.
Okay. Right.
Thanks.
So, okay.
Perfect. Thanks.
Yep. Have a good one.
I wonder if I can sign up with my RIT address.
Yeah. Go to try.
Couldn't hurt to try.
They've got the new Picard series coming, the new Star Trek series, Picard.
That's right.
20 years after Next Gen, Captain Picard. I don't know if he's been promoted to Admiral or not. In 20 years, he should have been.
You'd think.
It's his adventures with some person we're not sure of.
And, of course, my beloved bride, as long as she can stream Gibbs, she's happy.
Oh, yeah. And that's the key.
And that's the key.
Happy wife, happy life.
If mom ain't happy, ain't nobody
going to be happy then.
So, yeah, I may have to take a look at that. We'll see. So I'm still, as long as I take classes there, I'm still a student there, right?
Yeah, how do they define student?
Right. Well, I assume they do it by your address. If you've got an address at a university.
Yeah.
You're probably some form of student.
Or
faculty.
Member of the...
Right.
RIT. Right. Whether it's an actual student or faculty or whatever.
Right. So we'll see. It's kind of interesting. There's lots and lots of stuff. But I think you're right. We're seeing the balkanization of entertainment. They're breaking up into lots of... vertical markets,
specialties,
but not by like your preference in type of entertainment, but by who the content creator is.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it; it's a hard,
that's
a hard thing.
It's like what I told you. You know, when I first started it's been over 5 years now that I sat down and again, folks, what I did is just. Give you a little more information if you haven't heard before. I literally took about a year and made records of stuff that I watched.
Right.
Because I was considering, you know, the cable, they told me, all right, well, after you, this deal, it's going back up to this price. So that's what kind of got me, all right, well, then now I'm going to start doing my homework. And for the whole year that I still could get the discount, I sat and made notes of every, program that I liked and what station it was on, like Steve was saying. Just not the program, but the networks. And whether it was regular TV or on any of the other channels that, at the time, Time Warner offered. And I wrote them down. Then I had my list. I said, all right, here's the ones that I really do like, and I'd like to find a service with all these packages.
Right.
And sure enough, I wound up looking at Sling. They just happened to be the one. I mean, there are a lot of other great ones out there, depending on your viewing needs. Had great packages that you could pick between. And the one, I think it was called the Orange Service, because they had a blue one and an orange. And you can add other packages on it for not much money if you wanted to add a sports package on it. Because that was the one thing that bothered me about the cable. You know, you're paying for these QVCs and all this other sports stuff and everything. And I wasn't into that. So you could buy what you wanted, and Sling happened to have it. And they had all the channels I wanted to. Time Warner, AMC, and TNT, all these other ones that I wanted to watch.
None of them have history, though.
My wife has to watch her Hallmark movie.
Yes,
channels.
I do. I have Sling. Sling has it.
Does it?
And it has National Geographic, too. It might be the add-on that I had, because I'm all the way up to a whole $35.
Holy moly!
For my
must be nice to be rich.
$35 for my package, and that includes all the like I say, there's a history I believe in there. I might have had to add. It might have been one of the other add-ons that it went from $30 up to $35.
Cheese and crackers.
The wife has her Hallmark on there, and then her investigation. She loves Forensic Files.
Oh, yeah.
Watching those type of programs. So, it's all in there. And I say a good selection. And for $35 a month now?
And then you can't beat it. If it gives you what you want, you can't beat it.
And then this coming month, I should have my green light.
So History is owned by A&E, which also owns Lifetime.
Right.
So like I said,
so we used to not know networks or what network our show was on or who.
Now you need to.
Now you need to, and that's why most of the networks now put their little logo bug in the corner.
Yep. But yeah, they Sling offers it all, and like I say, for $35.
So for $15 a month, Sling Orange has History and BBC America.
Yeah. There's, like I say, that turned out, and I wound up going through all of them, trust me, for the ones that I wanted for mine. And that's what other folks have to do. That, getting back to what I was talking about, you actually have to take the time, and you might find one that, here's the majority of it. Take the time to go through all of them. There's, it'll save you, a lot of headaches doing your homework. It's just like backing up. Like we tell you to back up, the first time is always the hardest.
Yeah, right.
Thereafter, it's easy, folks. So once you get this all done and doing your channels that you want, going through these, they offer this, and there you go. You'll have it, and you'll be happy and saving quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
And going through quite a bit of headaches that, I thought they had this one.
Right. And it seems that Sling also has an add-on for DVR. Which is actually very nice.
And they got a lot of free stuff, too, through Sling. A lot of free movies that you can pull up and look at, and that, which I really like. Along with Roku. Within the Roku system.
Right. There's a lot of free stuff.
And more TVs, like I was telling Nick before, picked up a small TV because we needed one up in the bedroom. It's already got built-in Roku. I mean, I don't even have to buy the Roku stick. You just turned it on, and it walked you through the setup. And it's got one remote. And it's not one remote for the TV and one remote for Roku and all that. No, it's just one Roku remote. And it walks you through setting it up, connects to the network. It found all my channels off of my antenna, 8, 10, and 13. Boom, good to go. Plus Fox. And then over to Sling, and like I say, all the other programs that you can add. And like the other caller was saying, once you get a Roku, and say there's another particular service that's not on that menu, within Roku, you can go to Add, and it gives you a keyboard that you can type in the other package that you're looking for. It'll go out and find it and add it to your menu selection.
Yeah, it has an app store like the Apple TV. So,
exactly.
So on the Apple TV hardware box, you can get hundreds, if not thousands, of other channel services.
So, don't think you're limited, folks, right, just by what you see on that menu. You can go, like Steve was just saying, put in a search, and it'll go out there. If you only know part of the name, it'll go out there and look for you.
Right.
It's no different than an app store. Cause that's what Sling is. Actually, is a bunch of apps with these different programs
Sling
that are
available. Sling is, Roku is, all of them are.
I'm just using that one as an example. And just like you don't have to know on your phone, if you're an Android or that, you just know you go to the app store and it works. And it doesn't matter whether you're on what phone. If it's an Android phone, it works.
Right. I also, I just added two channels I haven't even had a chance to look at yet. Dust, which is premium sci-fi stuff, and Midnight Pulp, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's so cool. So yeah, there's bunches of, and both of those are free. They're just ad supported. So, I know Midnight Pulp does have a pay
because
for it tier.
That's the way our society is going now. I mean, back, 20 years ago, people were content to sit in front of the TV and here's your channels. This is what you could watch.
And it went off the air at midnight or something like that. And
well, that was back like 50, 60 years ago.
I remember when I was a kid.
Yeah.
They'd play the national anthem. They'd go off the air.
And we'd be sitting there watching the test pattern, waiting for Captain Kangaroo to come out in the morning.
Yeah. And the remote, the channel changer was hey, Dave, get up and turn the channel.
Right.
The youngest kid in the room.
Yeah.
Young legs.
Yeah. That's the way it was. But nowadays, whether it's on our phones, on our tablets, or whatever, folks are glued to those watching content.
Right.
Whether it's listening to music, watching a movie that they can go off and download now, pay and watch it at their leisure. You're no longer committed to, I got to have this, the DVD back by a certain time. You can download it to your phone or any device,
right,
and it'll let you keep it for so many days and watch it.
Right.
And you can watch it at your leisure.
And on every device,
yeah,
like you said. I mean, if you want, Steve's got his tablet here. He could watch stuff on his tablet. He could watch it on his computer.
I'm watching something right now.
It's us. You're watching us. I don't know if you recognize the two people who
and
are
it's not a rerun
on that screen, but it's you and it's me and it's all three of us because Dave's up in the little inset box.
Yeah, let's push it way off in the inset.
All right, I'm going to read another news item. You can, of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free. 1-800-790-0415. If you've been seeing the new Access Query is Corrupt errors, they're likely caused by buggy Office patches released on Patch Tuesday last week. This is a shock. I hope you were sitting down. There was a buggy patch for Patch Tuesday.
Again.
Microsoft, can you get 9 boxes and we'll do the Brady Bunch?
I've only got 3 cameras.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, all right. A third of the Brady Bunch. They're likely caused by buggy Office patches. Microsoft has started releasing fixes for the bad Office security patches. One of them for Access 2016 arrived Wednesday. Although we've been promised no C or D week second cumulative updates for the rest of the year, at least for Windows. Microsoft has acknowledged a bug it created in last week's Patch Tuesday Office patches and now promises that it'll update the bad fixes on most machines this week or next. Those are week C and week D, respectively, for those of you keeping track. The cause du jour, a bug in all of the, well, I guess the cause du month, I don't know what that word is in French, a bug in all of this month's Office security patches that throws an error in Access saying query is corrupt, when in fact the query in question is just fine. This will occur for an update query that updates a single table or specifies a where clause. This issue has an impact on all supported builds of Access. Now, you may be saying to yourself, I don't use Access. Yes, you do. If you're using Microsoft Office, Access is baked in and is used for a number of background type things.
Cause de moi.
Really? That's the cause of me, isn't it? I guess that would be without the S.
Yeah.
The bug was introduced on November 12th, 2019. It took Microsoft just a week to acknowledge it. Not bad. According to Microsoft, fixes for all versions of Access should be out by now, except for Office 365, the semi-annual channel version 1901, which is due next Monday, and volume licensees won't get the bug erased until December 10th, which is why you pay for a volume license, right? So you can be last. Anyway, if you've seen the bug, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Microsoft just isn't getting it.
Nope.
and I'm not sure what to say about them. I don't know what to say about how to fix that.
They're consistent.
Yeah, yes.
Consistently bad. Yeah.
They consistently put out bad patches.
Yep.
They have gotten very good at that. I mean, if you want your machine, you know, bricked or messed up, just do one of the patches.
Yep. It's a very, it's frustrating. We've talked about this before. One of the things Microsoft did was got rid of 99% of their quality assurance people, the people who did testing, the QA people. And instead, they got rid of all the machines. They had multiple setups of multiple different types of machines doing multiple things. It was all beautiful. They could test a bunch of stuff, find a bunch of problems, fix those problems. Now all their testing, most of it is automated, and all of it is being done on virtual machines, which are all identical. So you lose 90% of what you do QA for, which is multiple configurations.
And weird configurations.
So it's a problem that I don't think is ever going to be fixed. Microsoft clearly doesn't care. They're not even interested, I don't think, in any of that stuff anymore. They make most of their money off cloud computing. They just got a government contract for $10 billion. $10 billion with a B dollars. And by the way, Amazon is suing the government because they think they should have gotten the contract. Okay. But at any rate, the point is that Microsoft has already acknowledged they're making much more money off their cloud stuff than they are off of anything else. I think they just don't mostly care anymore about that stuff.
No,
they're already taking Edge and turning it into Chrome. There's been rumors that they're going to be doing. They actually had a test environment where they put the Windows GUI, the front end, over Linux for the back end. So who knows? Who knows where Microsoft is going to go in the future? The reality is that with all of these companies, if they ain't making money, they ain't interested.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to make enough money.
Right.
It's not that they're not making money. They're not making enough money.
Right. If they can make $2 here or $3 there, they'll go there. If they can make $1,000 here or $1,003 there,
yeah,
they'll go there.
They're going there. It's all driven by, you know, the shareholders. You know, the shareholders are the ones that dictate, you know.
The company,
a publicly
traded company has a fiduciary responsibility to make as much money for their shareholders as they can.
Yep, that's exactly correct.
And the customer doesn't bode well for the customers.
That's right. Well, the customer is in fact the shareholder.
Right. So
we
if
are
you,
the product if that you can, they sell to the shareholder.
If you can buy shares in the company, then they're serving you.
Then they're serving you. That's exactly right. But if you're just using the product, you're not important. And that's just the way that works. It's been that way for a very, very long time. And that's economics 101. All right, let's head back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed?
Hi, gents. I wanted to call you guys first before I put this out on the curb. Sometime back, I got a little portable TV from Sears.
Yeah.
Stick in the back room, you know, real good picture, UHF, VHF, beautiful. And, of course, the government changed the transmission.
Right.
I called one of the, because now all I get is dead air, obviously. And I called one of the big box stores, and they said they've got a converter, supposedly, but you have to have inputs. I don't see on this TV any place where you can have any inputs for the front or the back, so I don't know if I have to toss this or you have any suggestions.
Is there an antenna connection?
The antennas are right. They're built. The VHS are built, and you pull them out like rabbit ears. And then there's a little bow tie UHF that you just clip onto one of the antennas, and then in the back you can screw that in.
Yeah,
but so no inputs per se. Like they're doing a
yeah. That's TV. That screw in is generally where they could screw in, but you have to make sure you get the right one. Most of them, most of the converters expect an F.
Coax
Coax screw on connector, But some of them you can actually get a, in fact, you might even find them on Amazon now. You can get a an adapter that that screws onto that antenna input, then uses that as the input, and then gives you the F connector that you plug your box into.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that. Yeah, he just said the box was like about $60, which is kind of not too cost effective.
Well, yeah, they don't make a lot of them, right? So yeah. I get that.
You used to be able to get a free one when they did switch to from analog to digital.
Right, but you had to have inputs into your TV, didn't you, for that, in front of the back?
Well, so,
yeah, same thing, yeah. Either the F connector or the screw terminals.
I got the screw terminals for the UHF antenna, so you're saying that this would be worthwhile going down to. If I went to the one in the box store, what would I ask for, the converter box and what else? Or does it all come in one package?
What you want to do is if you're going to go down and talk to a human being, then what you want to do is tell is you need to know what you're going to plug into it. And maybe take a picture of the back of your TV and bring that with you.
Wait a minute. I'm just going to play devil's advocate here. How big is this TV?
Oh, it's only about, you know, you can pick it up with one hand. It's got a little handle on the top. It's about maybe 12 inches across.
You know, for the money that you're going to spend on that.
Yeah, that's true.
You could go out. You could go out and get a flat panel screen. I know, you know, even a small one is less than $100.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I've got one already. They have a special deal on. I got a Toshiba.
With a built-in digital tuner.
My old Toshiba, which works, but this is just a little one. Was I just got one time to stick in the back room? But the picture when it was on, the clarity was just phenomenal.
Yeah, but the screen was so small, you know, for your efforts and what you're going to put into it, I would suggest
getting a converter box and getting an adapter box.
Yeah, you're just putting so much into something that's old. And, you know, you don't know how long it's going to last, whereas if you go, I know I picked up just a 32-inch TV over at Walmart for, it's like $118.
Yeah, you can probably get a 12 or 13
with built-in Roku and everything else, one little remote, and you're good to go.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, just kind of like hanging on to old things, you know, you get old habits, you know.
Oh, yeah, no, I hear you, and you know, if it was worth it, I would say, yeah, go ahead. But since it is an older device, you don't know how long it's going to last. And like I say, you're trying to patch, you're band-aiding something that wasn't made for the new current technology and trying to make it work with the new technology. Mm-hmm. Whereas you, for the same money, you could go out and get something that's already set up and ready to go for this day and time.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid you're going to say. Okay,
yeah.
I
know.
Sorry. Anyway, take care.
Yeah.
All right, thanks. Yeah. I know it's so seductive to say I can take this old thing and make it new.
Yeah, yep. Well, we hate to waste stuff. That right. If you don't, it's just like you were saying, you know, with the old laptops. You know, you can revitalize them by putting simple Linux on it or one of these other and still get a little use out of it. And that's free.
Yeah.
That you can update. So that's not any, you know, out-of-the-pocket cost. He's talking about, you know, 60 to 70 or who knows how much.
You're gonna need the digital lead screw mm-hmm. terminal adapter
mm-hmm.
and then the coax cable to go into your converter box that you're going to buy. And then you're going to need a digital antenna to plug into the box to keep receiving the broadcast channel. So you're probably going to spend close to $100 on all these boxes.
And like
adapters.
I said, I got a 32-inch for $118 at Walmart. It's got built-in Roku and everything else. And
or even smaller than that. There's 24s.
Oh, there's 20.
I think about 24 is as small as I've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but, I just saw a 20. Here's a 22. 20? And there was a 15. 13.3 inch.
They don't get much cheaper, though.
They're not cheaper. They're just smaller. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 32 minutes after the hour. Oops. Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
All right, all right. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
Some good old time rock and roll on the jazz station.
Exactly right.
Nothing wrong with that.
So speaking of all of this stuff that we've been talking about, Apple has quietly removed customer reviews for products from its online store. This means that potential buyers can no longer see reviews of products sold via Apple's online store before they buy, while those who have already bought are unable to leave reviews. Apple sells numerous different products through its online store, including its own products and accessories, as well as items from third-party companies. Up until now, a ratings and review section would appear under the product listing, allowing customers to read other shoppers' thoughts on that particular product. Now that ratings and reviews section has been completely removed. The change applies to Apple's own products as well as to those from third parties. It is not uncommon for Apple products and accessories to have unfavorable customer reviews throughout Apple's online store. For example, Apple's Lightning to 3.5mm headphone jack adapter had over 700 one-star reviews. But now that the ratings and reviews details are no longer there, a potential customer has no way of knowing what to expect from a product unless they dive into the question and answer section or a third-party platform. This is an interesting, albeit controversial, move from Apple. While reviews for most products sold through Apple's online store can generally be found elsewhere, there is an obvious benefit to placing ratings and reviews directly alongside a product listing. Apple hasn't yet commented on why it removed the ratings and reviews section from its online store. I personally think it's cowardice. Did you use the ratings and reviews before you bought something? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
One of the problems with a lot of these rating sites is that everyone tries to game them. You'll have competing companies putting up false, fake reviews. You'll have people paying to put up positive reviews. You'll have people putting a review to complain about some policy and not actually about the product. So that you know, 700 one-star reviews on the headphone adapter was probably, why do I need a headphone adapter? Not that there was anything wrong with the headphone adapter. So I can understand why they did it, and I hope it's just so they can flesh out a better way to do it, to make sure the reviews are verified. I've seen a couple other places are doing verified purchaser. Yeah. So you can't leave a review unless your history shows you actually bought the thing.
Man, I tell you what, when I buy something from Amazon, I'm dunned constantly. Yeah. Oh, I see you bought. Would you review? And if I don't review it, I get another one.
Yeah.
But yes, at that point I am. The problem is I want to use it for a while before I unboxed it and it was fine. Thanks. I can't say anything yet.
I get the ones where you bought this. Could you answer this question?
I get those too.
And then I go look at the question, and it has nothing to do with the product. So, no, I'm not going to answer. And then I hate the answers are, no, I don't know.
Right.
Why bother saying you don't know?
Well, because you've been asked to answer them.
Yeah. So I have to read through all of these, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And then on the third page down is the, no, it doesn't work with, you know, this thing.
Right, right. Yeah, and they're always so specific.
Yeah,
you know, I have a 15-year-old Toshiba laptop. Will this work with it? Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I could spend half an hour looking up what ports you've got and et cetera, et cetera. But I'm just going to not answer.
Or this is a battery for a 2017 Horizon Hoppy E-Flight Timber UMX. And one of the questions is, will this work on my Cadet Cub?
Yeah.
No, this is a battery for a Horizon Hobby E-Flight Timber.
Right. No, and I do get that. What? And then you start getting questions that are okay, so somebody. One of the things that I was looking up the other day was 7-inch screen for my, what the heck is the thing?
Pi,
my Raspberry Pi. I wanted a 7-inch screen, and I found a printable case for it. And I also found a case that will take the Raspberry Pi, the 7-inch screen, and a 5,000 milliamp hour battery.
Ooh.
So it becomes a portable device. Not a bulky portable device, but a portable device. And half the questions were, could I use a 1,000 milliamp hour battery? Or a 10,000 milliamp battery, twice the battery power. And even without looking, my answers were, you can solder in anything, and no, it won't fit in that case. So if you redesign the case...
And some folks would try. Well, I used to have some that sit there and cut the back of the cases.
If it doesn't fit, you aren't using a big enough hammer. It's that simple.
Oh, and then some of the wood and other wiring and everything, tape combinations, when people were trying to fit in extra hard drives or this other stuff, because it wasn't meant to have it. But there's a spot there. And the board had it. Yeah, well, the board was made for multiple things. It could go in this little pizza box, or it could go in a bigger box.
Right.
He just didn't have the slots.
Now, I admit there's a certain fun factor in 3D printing a box and then building my own Raspberry Pi that sits in the case and I can take it around for however long the battery lasts, which nobody tells you, by the way. But I suppose if I put a 10,000 milliamp hour battery in instead of a 5,000 milliamp hour battery, it would last twice as long.
But you have the plan to 3D print it, right?
Right.
So stretch it so the bigger battery fits.
That's my point. You can redesign the case to fit the bigger battery.
Well, see,
but I'll guarantee you the battery that's 10 millimeters bigger on every dimension is not going to fit in the space that the original battery was supposed to fit.
No.
Right. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah, some of these battery packs, though, you could design the box so it just has a little lid that would flip up or snap or screw on.
Yeah, I'm not saying you can't design it, but as it sits, it's not going to fit.
Might have a design for you, like I say, another node.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing one up now for the regular Raspberry Pi with just a 2.5-inch screen.
Oh, yeah.
But to do one, say, with a 5-inch screen.
5 or 7. Sure, why not?
Yeah.
7. Honestly, why not? The reality is that if you have a 7-inch screen and you've got a case that fits that 7-inch screen, you've got plenty of room for a big battery. You got room for two.
Can I fit a 10-inch screen in that?
Yeah.
Yes, with a big enough hammer and shattering all the plastic.
Well, no, there's some...
Shut up.
There are some cases out there right now. I was telling Nick that I ordered this one case for my node to... Because they've got designs that you can sit there and custom design the would work with your model airplane stuff too, because it'll tell you can. Some folks have done programs for altitude and temperature and wind and everything else that it can sit there and do readings.
Right.
And
you just have to put the right sensors on it.
Yeah, and put it up there.
Well, that's the beauty of a Raspberry Pi. You can pretty much attach any dang thing you want to it, and somebody's already written code for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's in there, and, it's available. And I'm just amazed at, like you said, I've been learning slowly more and more pseudocode and, SSHing in. That's the easiest. I mean, and more programs are doing that instead of trying to do all the code like back in the day when we were doing stuff like Line Editor or all that. Oh, heck with it. They just put a GUI interface in there. Like with me, I deal with the PiStar, and PiStar opens up a whole panel that you can customize all your settings and everything else. What do you want it to do and this and that with just a click of a button.
Yeah, that's part of the problem that we're all running into is back in the day, you wrote a program that did a thing, and people typed it into the command line, and the thing was done.
Well,
but now, you've got to have 2,000 options and be able to set everything and do everything. By the time you're finished writing that, it's like all I really want to do is change the channel.
Well, it's just like I was telling you, I'm going to add the screen. And before, I was reading all this YouTube videos, and they're a couple years old. And it was saying how you got to go in, SSH in, and do the pseudocode. Well, I come to find out with a new document, No, you don't have to do that anymore. All you have to do is go over to this panel and click this down button. Click on that feature because we've already added it in.
Right.
So it does it automatically for you.
Right. It's amazing what these things can do nowadays.
It's so much
fun. First half of the show, we were talking a lot about Roku boxes and all of that other stuff. One of the things you can do with a Raspberry Pi is turn it into a DVR.
Yep.
And you can then hook your connections right into that and stick whatever size hard drive you want. I've got a 128 gig thumb drive that I can plug into the side of the thing and save all my video to that and play it all back whenever I want, do whatever I want with it.
Yeah, and there's plenty of people that make different cases for different things that you want to do with it. They're sturdy. As a matter of fact, I saw one gentleman take the bigger muffin fans,
yep,
like that you'd have in a regular PC for cooling. He has that on the one end, blowing that through to keep the thing cool.
Well, with a Raspberry Pi 4, you need that. It overheats horribly.
Well, they are. Most of the Raspberry Pi 4s that you buy all come with the fan units.
Yeah,
you to get the cases that will have the fan mounts in it.
Yep, yep. The 3s don't need it. The 2s certainly don't. The 0s definitely don't. But the 4s absolutely need some sort of active cooling.
Yep, because they do get warm, and there's... Well, it's just like, with our PCs. They're pushing the limits.
They're pushing the limits. There's no such thing as a free lunch.
I mean, this thing, folks, is... If you remember an old pack of cigarettes.
Yeah.
A Raspberry Pi is not much longer, wider, or taller than a pack of cigarettes. It's literally that small and more powerful than probably the 8088s that came out. As far as computer
it's more powerful than a lot of machines.
I mean, it's got 4 USB ports on it. It's got a HDMI port on it. It's got hookup for networking, whether you want to plug it in or wireless. And you can turn it on or off through various programs.
You can add cameras. You can add anything to it. I've added a keyboard to mine.
And here's the thing. It runs on a whole 5 watts.
Yeah.
A mere 5 watts, and this thing is up and running. And like I say, it can run different screens that you can add to it. I've seen folks doing gaming with it. They've got gaming packages now. You can get a Raspberry Pi, and they're only if you got an all-in package, say for doing the gaming and all that, you're talking maybe $120 with a 7-inch screen. And the Raspberry Pi and even the game controller, power switch and everything else, you're up and going. And that's with a Raspberry 3 Plus.
Right.
You can have a lot of fun with it. It's something different. If you like to tinker with stuff, if you were a computer builder and you liked playing with that or Linux or anything else like that, definitely for Christmas, put that on your wish list. Get a Raspberry Pi and play around with those.
And there's a huge online community of Raspberry Pi users and makers.
Oh, I belong to 2 different groups that do different Raspberry Pi projects, along with there's another one I just discovered for the screens and playing around with the screens and setting up the screens the way you want them to and writing your own programs. There's free software out there that you can design your own screens.
Send me a link, will you?
Yeah. There's a gentleman that has done a Raspberry Pi, put it on a 7-inch screen, controls his whole home with it.
Yeah, if you want a retro game, there's a company called Canakit, CANAKIT at canakit.com. They're selling the retro gaming kit for $90. It includes controllers and everything except the television.
And the thing of it is, though, it's so cheap to get into, to play around with, and you could have one heck of a powerful tool. Even, like you said, creating your own DVD controller.
Was it Bonnie who was saying he created a Minecraft world for his grandkids on a pie?
I think it was.
You can do that. It's astonishing what you can do.
Oh,
there's
so many folks that are out there that are, like Steve was saying, that are doing and supporting each other and communities, you know, because it's a lot of fun and it's not a lot of money.
No, it's really cheap.
So what? You mess up the code of that? You take this little card out, micro SD card out, reflash it, and start over again.
Yep. Yep.
There's not much that you can mess up.
Yep. It's kind of astonishing what you can do with these things, and it's kind of astonishing how cheap they are. You can add all kinds of devices to them.
We're back to the tinkering days.
Yeah. Back then, of course, when I started with these things, you had to tinker. Yeah. It wasn't a choice.
You had a computer, now, you built it yourself, and then wrote your own code.
That's right. The Altair. I have a friend who has an Altair 1. He says he's going to get it working any day now. But you can get all kinds of parts and do prototyping. You can get cameras. You can get everything. For these things,
well, like
kinds
I say,
of sensors.
I'm doing it with my ham radio and creating a node spot, mm-hmm. What they call a node for folks that don't know. It's literally, it's on a, as Nick said, a Pi Zero. Pi Zeros are, if you buy the board, all of $23. You buy what they call the hat, which is the antenna. That's another $40. You get yourself a node. And you, with a node, you can plug it into a radio, a ham radio handset, and talk all over the world.
Right.
And literally we do.
It's interesting the antenna costs more than the computer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, because it's literally a little stubby.
Yep.
Yep.
It's a little stubby, but it hooks you up to your, and you tether it to your phone system, runs off of, again, 5 watts, or 5 volts, rather. 5 volts, and you're up and running, and
Plug it in your car, take it with you.
Yeah, I do all the time.
Well, I was looking at this. You can create streaming music services right out of your Pi. It's all has to do with storage. And like I said, I got 128 gig thumb drive.
Yeah, there's no reason you can't do it. And there are so many other projects. We're just mentioning a few. You right. folks can go online, and I'm sure put in a particular thing that you're wanting to do with a Raspberry Pi, and I'll almost guarantee somebody's doing something with that type of project.
Right. And if you're interested in programming and things like that, it does all of that stuff too. All right, that music tells us we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. Do you want to thank you?
Yeah.
All right, I'll thank you this week. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't worry. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You're listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported thanks to your generosity and love. Jazz 90.1. So, be good to each other this week, and we'll be back. We'll see you in just 100. And 66 hours.